You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
Welcome back to Golden Hour. I'm your host, Charlene Kay.
And I'm Dave Yim.
And Golden Hour is a podcast that spotlights Asian musicianship. We are so grateful that you're back.
So, Charlene, what have you been watching this month?
As you may know, I've been doing my my solo show, Tiger Daughter, about my tiger mom. I have some exciting news. I'm going to be doing it at Edinburgh Fringe Festival in August.
Amazing.
So if anyone is going to be there, feel free to spread the word. I'm going to be there the whole festival. So I've been watching a lot of comedy to hype myself up and just kind of get in that mindset. And one of my favorite specials that I saw recently was Guess How Much by Jimmy O. Yang. I thought it was so funny, really related to a lot of the immigrant humor, of course.
Such a good show.
And I find myself quoting it all the time.
So Charlene, are you giving your golden award to Jimmy O. Yang this month?
You mean our not golden shower award? Yes, I'm just going to keep saying it. Yeah, my golden shower goes to Jimmy O. Yang.
Charlene, it's definitely a Jimmy O. Yang hype girl. We watched a few clips and we had to just watch the whole thing. It's so good.
Yeah. How about you, Dave?
Well, I am still coming off of awards season where Beef swept the Golden Globes, also came home with a bunch of Emmys. So we're very excited for the Asian American,
the community
storytelling of the season. So we're really proud of Beef. If you guys haven't checked it out yet, this is not sponsored. We just love the show. I love the show.
I love it too.
And you got to watch it to the end. My dad asked me, you know, he was watching and he was like, did you watch Beef? And I was like, yes. I was like, it's a little different. I was like, I don't know if you'll like it, but I do recommend watching it all the way to the end because that's where it really makes a turn. So no spoilers, but.
Did they watch it all the way to the end?
He hasn't reported back yet. So either he hated it or he forgot.
It's one of the two.
I've also been watching the third season of the Netflix Korean reality show Singles Inferno, which was a hot show this month. I don't normally watch these kinds of reality shows, especially dating shows, but occasionally I'll get into it. I did do Love is Blind over the pandemic. You know, I'm not Korean, but there's something really special about like Asians dating Asians. And obviously like in Korea, like Korean people are gonna date Korean people. But, you know, I grew up in a mixed race household with like a mixed race family. And, you know, I wasn't around like a large Asian sort of community where I was growing up. So like the idea of like, you know, just Asian people dating each other and in that sort of romantic way is like kind of still very novel to me. Yeah. So it was kind of cool. And it's like in a way that you don't get, I think, through like K-dramas or like, you know, like movies and TV shows, just to like see how people actually interact with each other. Of course, you know, it is also kind of a trashy reality dating show. But of course, I was like hyper analyzing everything and like, what does this mean for the culture? But it is just very fun. And the commentators make it such a joy. So that was my that was my guilty pleasure watch of this month.
Love it, love it, love it.
So speaking of dating, I don't know how well this segue is going to work. But speaking of dating, our guest for this month is actually someone who is very happy just going on solo dates. And that is Fig.
Fig, just in time for Valentine's Day.
Yes. You know, if you don't have someone for Valentine's Day, it doesn't matter. You can go on a solo date, which is one of the big themes of this interview.
Yes, very much so.
Let me explain. I was sad at home, hiding from the rain, cooking couscous on low. I opened my computer.
So Fig, aka Fei Liu, She is a Singapore-born, New York City-based indie singer-songwriter. That immediately stuck out to me because my family is also from Singapore, and we loved her music. We immediately booked her on our third Golden Hour Fest last September. And she made the whole room feel like a living room. She made everyone sit down. It was just her and an acoustic guitarist, and she just gave us such an authentic performance. It was pretty unforgettable.
Yeah, I just loved that she was able to take this DIY space that we set up, and she really like turned it into like her own living room. You know, she played like really stripped down versions of her songs. She was just so charming and just captivated you. And I actually had one friend who said to me, he was like, I feel like this is like seeing Nirvana in like 1989 or like right before they blew up. And it just speaks to the immense talent that she is.
Agreed. Fig also loves all things corn, which we'll talk about in the interview. She has a hobby of going around to these New York City food establishments and trying corn lattes, corn on the cob, all these different types of corn boba. And we dig into what that means as well. It's something that I've never heard before.
It's very charming and it fits. I don't know why it fits, but it's like her mascot, and we are here for the corn.
Here's a clip of Fig's new single, Solo Dates.
Somewhere where I'm taking myself on dates around the world. It's not so serious. I'm moving at my own pace. Don't have to wait for anybody. Taking myself on dates.
Faye, it is so good to have you on the podcast. The last time I saw you was at Golden Hour Fest, where you performed and gave such an incredible performance. You made everybody sit down. You had total command of the space. I believe you were maybe right after my set, which was like very chaotic and like high energy, and you made it so intimate and you made it feel like a living room. So yeah. I just enjoyed that so much.
Thank
you. We're so grateful to have had you there.
Thank you for having me. It was an amazing event, and I'm excited to talk more today.
One of the best things about, obviously, your music and your performance was incredible, but also the fact that you brought your extended family, all of your aunts and uncles, I think, right?
Yeah, they were visiting, and then it was like a last minute thing, and they were like, why don't we all come? And then they all came, and it was very sweet, and they're all like so awkward, like standing in the corner, but
oh my God,
it was the first time them hearing me, which was fun.
That was the first time they heard you play live?
Yeah.
What did they think?
They thought it was very cute. I think it was cool because it was an acoustic set, which is what I usually don't do. So I think it was a very cool, like, intimate way to see me perform for the first time.
Well, let's get right into it. First of all, I love your music. We're both big fans. Seeking for Connection has been one of my most listened to songs this year.
Aww,
I really, really, really love it. Love the video too. Your energy and... you look so relaxed and so free in the video, and it just reminds me of music that I used to listen to when I was growing up, starting to make music. One thing that I noticed right off the bat was that you are from Singapore, which my family is too. My mom was raised there. She was born and raised there. She grew up there in the 1960s in a family of eight in poverty. It was such a tough time back then because Singapore was just becoming a country. And I go back once every few years or so. As you know, the trek is just extremely long and arduous. But I'd love to hear about your experience there, how you started to get into songwriting, what your first experience of listening to like American and Western music was, and how that journey began for you.
Yeah, since a kid, I moved around a lot, and I was born in the Philippines, and then before moving to the US, I moved like seven times, and I consider Singapore my home because it's the place I've lived the most. But like, I lived there for 6 years, but for like 2 years, and then I left, and then 2 years, and then I left, and then 2 years, and then I left. But it's still like where I consider home and like most of my core memories. So definitely moving around a lot was an interesting thing of just like gaining experience and things like that. And when I was growing up, I didn't really, I was in choir, but I wasn't super interested in like doing music or thinking about doing music. And then when I lived in Singapore for like, I lived in Singapore for 3 years till I moved to the US for college. And when I was there, I was really into like those lo-fi study beats to listen to.
100%. Which they, I can see the similarity between that and your album art, actually.
Yeah.
It's like a similar like the animated aesthetic. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I was into that and I didn't really think much of it. But then once on social media, I saw this girl and she was singing on top of the study beats. And I like didn't think that was possible. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And it would just be like three sentences. Like it was like when like little Instagram videos, like 20 seconds. And it was like just a black screen, but her singing over lo-fi beats. And I was like, this is so cool. I really want to try this. So then I started trying to recreate it. And I would send my best friend at the time, like Snapchat videos, like the phone was like, the screen was black, but I would send him like Snapchat videos of me just singing these, like like trying to sing over lo-fi beats. And I was like, oh, this is so cool.
Yes.
So yeah. And I feel as though that was me thinking like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like writing my own lyrics for the first time. And I was like, whoa, you can like do this and you can like add all these things together. And I thought it was fun. And growing up too, I didn't have any interest in doing music, but I'm very lucky that my parents exposed us to a lot of music. Like our first concert was Beyonce when I was 9 and I lived in Beijing at the time.
And then my what a first concert.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was very cool. And like throughout then we would go to concerts, but also as a family, we would go to like festivals together. Like my parents would even go to Camp Flogna, like hip hop festivals in like different countries.
Your parents
and
would go to Tyler, the Creator's festival.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? That's the coolest thing I've ever heard. By far the coolest parents on this podcast that we've had so far.
They have like really cute pictures of them with like really young kids. And then they're just like, a lot of people will come up to them and be like, are you at the right show? And they're like, yes, we are. but
wow, that's so layered.
Yeah, it's so funny. But it was really cool because they were equally as supportive of like being able to explore music. And that was the first time I was introduced to music. And then I didn't really think much of it, but now I'm like, whoa, this like contributed a lot to how I maybe do things now. And being able to just watch so many shows and being like very inspired. So yeah. And then that's how I kind of got interested in making or thinking about making music was back in high school. And then when I moved to New York for college, then I was like, wait, I could maybe make these 20-second clips longer and do a minute.
Imagine that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For anybody who isn't familiar with this trend, it's on YouTube and the title of the video is usually Lo-Fi Beats to Study To. And it's an animated, kind of anime looking video of this person studying at a desk and there's usually rain coming down the window. It's
Lo-fi
extremely
girl.
Relaxing. Yeah.
She's an
yeah.
icon. Yeah.
Yeah. We stand. And so if you don't know what that is, you can look it up. But this is what gave Faye her start in songwriting, which sometimes when I'm meditating, I like listen to meditation music. And there's the rare, you know, flute track or like waterfall track that I'm kind of like, this kind of slaps. And I find myself like humming and like, I don't know why it like doesn't occur to me that I can write over something like that. It's just like the fact that you took that and used it as a springboard for your own creativity is awesome.
Yeah.
And it is also like such a Gen Z thing to do.
So it's such a 2023 origin story just yeah. to like put on lo-fi beats that is meant to sort of be in the background. But in your head, you're sort of like, okay, there's something here. Let me like put a melody on it. It's just supposed to like make you focus, but instead you're thinking about the beats, which I love. And that meeting with like these giant festivals that you went to in Asia and then coming to New York and like absorbing the energy of the city. I think all of those things are like very present in your music.
Yeah. It was funny. Like when I moved, I then was like, oh, I want to contact these people that make the beats. Cause in a lot of lo-fi music, they sample voices and it's just like someone going like, or like right. they're singing like three sentences, but then they like pitch the producers like pitch it up and then they like use it. And I was like, I want to be that like pitched up person. And then I
set the bar high.
And then when I moved here, I was like, I'm just going to cold email like all the producers. And then luckily like some came back to me and then they did pitch me up and like, and I was able to be featured in that. And then after like, I was like, lo-fi music is sometimes sad. And I was like, I like this, but maybe this isn't really like who I am, like personally. And then after lo-fi music, I discovered like indie pop and I was like, whoa, what is this? And it was when like the like so Rex Orange County, Claro, like that wave of people were coming. I was like, this is so cool. It feels so DIY still at the same time because I feel lo-fi is still very intimate. But like indie pop was like a little more upbeat. And I was like, wait, I want to try this. And then that's how I kind of went on to this genre afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, some of your early tracks on Spotify, you definitely hear that lo-fi influence, kind of like washy vocals and yeah, those lo-fi beats. But then I think probably starting around 2020 is when I think we get the current iteration of your music where you start infusing a lot more fun, a lot more sort of like silliness. And that's when I feel like you really start to find your voice.
Yeah, definitely.
And one of the themes that I think runs through a lot of your music is like this infectious joy. I think in a lot of your music videos, it's just like, you know, you're by yourself a lot of the time, but you're just having so much fun. And, you know, I think the themes around like cooking for one and solo dates is this idea of just like, I'm just out here. Faye is just out here having a blast. She doesn't need anyone else. Like, are you on board? Because we're going to go, like, get in the car, loser. Like, we're going to go have fun.
Exactly.
Is that sort of, like, a perspective that you've always had and sort of are now, like, infusing into your music?
Yeah. In high school, I would film, like, these Snapchat. Like, also in high school, I'd go on these, like, what, like, solo dates came from inspiration from high school. Because I would film these, like, vlogs on Snapchat and send it to my friends and be like, hey, guys, it's Faye. I'm on my solo date. And I'd be in, like, different places in Singapore or, like, wherever. And, like, eating by myself or, like, picnicking by myself. And I think at the time in high school, I did it because it was hard for me to make friends. But I think as I kept doing it, I just started to feel so comfortable with myself that I just like, I was like, ah, I'm gonna just embrace it and like have fun with it. So yeah, and that's how like solo dates came and like cooking for one and being able to feel comfortable with yourself, I think is a thing that a lot of people are not comfortable with. And I remember like, I was like, guys, I love going to the movies by myself. I love doing this. And they're like, how can you do that? And I was like, I don't know. Like, it's just so fun. And I think it's a special thing to embrace because a lot of times like people are like, oh, I have like this many friends. But sometimes like if you're so comfortable with yourself, it's like a very rare thing to have. And it's awesome to have that like self-love, but also just like you don't need to rely on people too much to like enjoy life, which is important.
Oh, it's so inspiring and freeing. And yeah, we can really sense that in your music. And also, in my early 20s, I was like, I need a boyfriend. Like, I was definitely nowhere near the level of maturity that you've just displayed. So 37-year-old me really appreciates that. And I currently resonate with everything that you're saying. And I think it's awesome that folks, that you're spreading the message to young folks in this way that you can be independent and you don't necessarily need that. You don't need partnership to feel whole. Like, it can be something that adds.
Yes, exactly. The foundation is like loving yourself and like being able to feel comfortable with yourself. And yeah, I think that's important.
But I think also on top of that, there is this element of like, come join me. Like, I'm having fun. It's not this like attitude of like, oh, I don't need anybody. You know, yeah. I feel like there can be like that negative side to it too of just like, you know, I don't need you. You don't need me. It's more of just like, I'm out here having a blast. Like, jump
you
on
should
the fig
too.
Bandwagon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's a welcomeness.
Get on the party bus.
To it. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And something that is like about your melodies and your music, it just feels so effortless. And I think the fact that you've now revealed that you were writing melodies on top of lo-fi beats, like that makes a lot of sense because they just flow like these songs have always existed. You know, when you hear a song and you're like, oh, this, there's no world in which that song didn't exist. And it like came through you. I'm interested, like, what is your songwriting process like now? Do you still like start with the beats, then write melodies over it? And yeah, how does that work?
Yeah, I still, depending on who I work with, usually we, it's either like working on just the lyrics and the melody. Like I, when I started and now, I'm still very not great with theory. So a lot of times I would write just like a cappella because I'm like, I don't know how to, like, I'm not the best at chords and I didn't know how to like play chords like when I started. And I was like, I'm gonna just do this a cappella. And that's how a lot of things came when I didn't have the lo-fi beats. And I think I still do that now because I'm just so used to it, which is fun because it's like you can really make anything and you're not restricted with like a set of chords. But now I think when working with people, we either go with the beat or we have like a little element and then we kind of just like riff off each other and just like, I do like a melody vomit where we like, if we figure something out, me and whoever I'm working with would just like record on like a mic like this and be like, or like, it doesn't have to have words, just like melodies. And we'd maybe record like 20 melodies and then we would listen to them and be like, listen through and be like, okay, what are the ones that stick? And then how can we maybe fit lyrics? Or if we're singing gibberish, maybe this gibberish could become something. So yeah, a lot of it is like just melody vomit with like, and having like a really light foundation and then building upon that. And then sometimes if I'm not with someone, I would just go by myself, write something like super basic and like lyrics mainly and very like just raw melody and lyrics and then bring it to them. So yeah, kind of just depends on the moment.
Yeah, I think that's great. When you make music now, do you collaborate with certain people? Do you produce yourself? How do those tracks get written? Or do you still write over YouTube tracks, which is completely valid?
I now collaborate with people, but I'm not a person where I can collaborate with like 10 different producers and like do that thing where like everyone like different day, different producer. And yeah. I've kind of narrowed it down to like three. I think it's like friendships and things like that. I've
totally
accumulated like a relationship with people that I feel so comfortable with them. And now I work with like 2-3 people and it's been the same people basically since the beginning in like 2020 when I started.
That's super special. You need to have your tribe. You need people that you can trust and that you can just like, you can do that melody vomit and
yes.
know that they're not going to judge you at all. Just
yes.
know that you can have
yeah.
all that space.
I've done it where like I've tried it with other new people and I felt like self-conscious because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm maybe wasting their time or like
yeah.
they look bored. But when I'm with the people that I'm like comfortable with, they're like, they're down with it and they're down
yeah.
with the process because we've just done it like that together all the time. So
yeah.
it's comforting.
Good. I love to hear that. Is one of them the guitarist that we saw at Golden Hour Fest?
Her. And then mm-hmm. also, I've been
Michelle,
working with
right?
like Michelle's producers, Charlie and Julian. They're
That's
like
amazing.
The first people I worked with and I still work with them today. And it's cool that we've like all grown together in our own ways.
Keep it in the fam.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. Yeah. As you know, probably Michelle has been a previous guest on the podcast and we talked a little bit about how, you know, Sundial before this call started. So just like, you know, just it's a chosen fam.
Yeah.
Vibe
a community
on Golden Hour that we love.
Yes.
You just got off tour with Grant Perez. How was that experience? Tell us all about it. Highlights, lowlights. We were following along on Instagram. It's so awesome to see people singing along with you. And it seems like people really have been paying attention and devoted fans have been showing up prepared at your shows.
Yeah.
Which is
it was so, so fun. Like Grant has been I've been looking up to him for so long and I was able to open for him for like a small show at Mercury Lounge in June. And when I met him, I was like freaking out. And then after I met him, I had to like go outside the room and like compose myself. Cause like, oh my gosh, I just met him. And I was like
yeah.
fangirling like in my head and inside. And I, when planning like who I wanted to open for this year, like he was on the number one. Cause I felt as though I haven't done a headline show, but if I wanted to find an, like, if I am thinking who my audience was, I was like, an audience similar to Graham Perez.
Oh my gosh, manifested, baby.
When I went on tour, I was like, okay, these people are like sweet, they're crazy at the same time. And they're also like, it was like the best tour experience I've ever experienced. And also, Graham Perez himself is just one of the nicest artists I've ever met. And it felt just so, he made us all feel welcomed. And then he was also making sure we're okay. And like all those little things made such a big difference. And yeah, it was cool. I was able to fangirl like every night and just like scream his music. And I never got tired of it. Oh. And also playing, it was the first time playing in front of like over 1,000 in the audience. So it was a very cool experience. Wow. And also this time we were able to bring a drummer, which is what I wanted for so long, because of like to jump for energy.
Yes.
And yeah, just so much learning. My dad went on tour with me. He was like our tour manager.
Oh, wow. Oh my God. That's so sweet.
So it was cool to like, we also, me and my dad love food. So at the same time, because we were in our own car, we could like go wherever we want and eat across the US. But he also helped with like merch and was nice because he was there.
Oh my God, your dad is your merch girl.
I hope that was a real marketing advantage, so he could be like, buy my little girl's merch, everybody. Yeah. Like, didn't she do such a great job? Like,
it was very cute. And a lot of people at the end, they would like, they want to take pictures with him, they want him to sign stuff. Like, it was a whole thing. And my mom like made him a jacket and it said like Papa Fig on it. So every at the merch table, you can see like he's my dad, and he'd be like in pictures. He'd emphasize the Papa Fig.
Oh my God, I'm crying. That is so cute. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so between you touring with Grant Perez, you being friends with Dorothy and Jisoo of Sundial, and Emma and Jamie of Michelle, like it seems like you're very much in the Asian American like artist community. Is that something that you've intentionally fostered, or do you just sort of find yourself in spaces with similar like-minded Asian artists?
Yeah, I think like a mix of both. Especially in the beginning, I didn't think much of it, but as I met Asian artists and then started talking to them, it was cool because I feel as though we're going through similar but different experiences, but it felt very comforting to talk to them. And it felt really nice to just like, I met Dorothy and Jisoo when we toured in Atlanta and we like had dinner, and it was cool because Dorothy's also like, she went to international school and things like that. And we like had so many similarities. Mm. So it just felt so comforting to talk to someone about this. And it just was cool because I feel as though also as a community where it doesn't feel like we're one-upping each other. It's more of like just supporting each other and feeling happy with what everyone is going through and what everyone is doing and just supporting that. So yeah, I think having, after like just meeting people, it's like, I really like this community and I want to keep meeting more people, which I think is super special.
Yeah, you are already there, baby. It's like, it's really awesome to see. What were some of your standout tour stories?
This tour, a girl like was like, can you sign my forehead? And like I was like, are you sure? And like it was the first, it was like, and I had to like just, it was so funny. And it was the first time like people also, because I have like corn as my theming, and like I don't like try to push it too much, but like it was the first time like people would give me like crochet, like they would crochet corn for me, or they would like give me corn keychains, or people were like,
it's perfect.
And it was very sweet. So it was like the branding is working, but also it's like cool that like people resonate with that, which is very
cool. Your fans have like an inside joke. It's like, do you have a name for your fandom?
I don't yet.
Well, what about like the kernels? Or like
kernels
the
is good.
The kernels, I like that. Wait, we got to rewind a little bit here, because
yeah,
one thing
I'm
that I did not
about
assume about you is your love of corn. And then as soon as you spend a little bit of time on your Instagram, I'm like, whoa, corn is big thing. You're even a corn aficionado. You do these taste tests of various corn products, such as corn lattes, corn gummies, corn sushi. And I'm just like, wow, this is incredible. I also love corn. I don't know if it's as much a part of my maybe brand as yours, but I do... I understand the love of corn because it is a wonderful food.
Yes.
Is there any further story behind this, or is it just corn is great?
Corn is dope.
Corn is great and dope. I fell in love at this moment. But in Singapore and like Southeast Asia, in McDonald's, there's corn in the cup. So like it's just a cup of corn with like butter that you can like get. And I was like 5, 6 at the time. And I went to try it for the first time and I fell in love. I was like, oh my gosh, it's so good. And then also when I would road trip to places like in Malaysia, when like visiting people and family, and like the little, there would be just like corn at like rest stations, and I would keep buying it. And then I started falling in love, and I was like, oh my gosh, I love this so much. Oh my gosh. And then I started just like buying corn things. And then now like my brand is that. And also like I have Cobb's Town, which is like my event thing that I do that's corn themed. And like now it just kind of snowballed into this. So.
The corn is taking over. You can't get away from it now.
Exactly.
Well, tell us about the Cobb Stand events, like these community sort of, community-based corn-themed events.
I started Cobb Stand in last year in July, and I did it because I moved around so much, it was difficult for me to find community, and it was hard for me to make friends. And also I don't like going to parties. I've been to like maybe 2 in my life. Like I'm not good at like going out. And I get very nervous in like big crowd situations, especially when it's like a concert's fine, but like DJs or things like that, I get very like nervous. So I decided I wanted to create a space where people like me who like doing things alone could come to a space and feel very safe, but also meet people, but also explore and discover different things. So we first started with music events where we would work with different businesses and hold like intimate concerts there. And then after that, this year, in the beginning of this year, I did my first community dinner where me and my mom, we made laksa and we had like maybe... like 2 sets of 12 people come, and it was cool because everyone came by themselves, like no one came with someone else. And then after that 2 hours, people like were exchanging like Instagrams and numbers and all that. So it's a really fulfilling like passion project of mine, and it's just very loving. It's cool because now when people come to shows, they're like, oh, I'm with the friend that I met at your Cobb Stand event. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so cool. And I think like my goal for Cobb Stand and more in the future is like creating just, a space where people can feel comfortable and just like try new food, but also discover artists depending on the event. So yeah.
Oh, that's so wonderful. That feels so aligned with why Dave and I started Golden Hour.
Kathy? Kim?
Steve? Where have you been? We haven't seen you for 7 years.
Has it been that long?
Uh-huh.
Oh. I was on a fishing boat. Training. It's part of the plan.
What training? What plan?
The third season of the Korean Drama Podcast!
Okay, we're doing this again? Okay, but there's no body switching in this one, right?
No! The only thing we're switching is the fact that we're going to watch a good drama this time from 2020 called Itaewon Class, a story about starting a restaurant and a dish that Koreans love called revenge.
I thought you were going to say kimchi jjigae.
I thought you were going to say juk.
Those two. Koreans love those two.
Listen to the Korean Drama Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
I want to talk about how joyful your social media presence is. And I'm wondering, when was the inflection point where you started to notice that more and more people were listening to your music? Do you think that it came, your audience came from TikTok? Did it have anything to do with you being spotlighted as a Tidal Rising Artist of the Month? Did it get a bump when you went on tour with Grant? Like what, like how do you think that your fan base started to expand?
Yeah, I think it definitely a mix of social media, like TikTok and Instagram. And then also I think very lucky to be going on such on tours with such amazing artists. My and being, I feel as though when watching and opening for them, which is a very, I think, unique as an audience member, if I fall in love with the opening artist, I'm more likely to just like stick with them. Mm-hmm. And I think because I've been able to be in a room and being able to open for people, a lot of the more core audiences have been from that. But I think a lot of people have definitely also discovered me through TikTok and things like that.
Amazing. I love that.
Yeah, I think the videos that you make, it almost like feels, I'm like, is this part of like a real official quote music video? I don't know. You're just like, you, they feel very intentional and they bring, I think, that same kind of energy. I think when a lot of people do social, it's kind of like, I don't know, maybe like an afterthought or, you know, but it feels very much a part of, again, like this joy of just like, oh, I want to go dance with Bae. Like, come on, let's go.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, actually before making music, I was really into just making really silly videos. And in high school and college, I would do like, I think it was before like TikTok, but I would lip sync and recreate music and make my own music videos to artists that I really like at the time. And I would just make random videos. And when I did it in college, I'd made one for an artist that I love now. His name's Toby Liu, and he's like a rapper. And I made it, and it was after that he reposted it, and it was the first time I was like, whoa. Like an artist noticed it. And I didn't make music. I had like a cover at the time, but I didn't really think about making music. But then after that, he's like a really a core person that inspired me to just be creative. Cause after that recognition, I was like, oh, maybe I should try more. And then when I started making like indie pop music, I was like, wait, I could merge making my like silly music videos, but I could make music videos for my own songs. And I was like, whoa. And then when social media and like more short form content came around, it was cool because it still had the energy of what I did before, but I could just adapt and create more. So I think that's why maybe my I like making social media content very luckily, because I know a lot of artists don't. But I think because of the core of me doing that before music and just me being like wanting to do it because it's fun and silly, still I have that like energy and spark when doing it, which I'm very grateful for.
Yeah, it started on Snapchat. Now we hear.
Yeah.
When you first started to write music, who were some of your formative artists besides Toby? Was this? Did you have records that you listened to? And I'm actually curious about this as a millennial, because I grew up listening to records, like putting CDs in my car and driving around. When you were growing up, do you find that you still listen to full records? And did you have full records that influenced you? Or do you have individual songs that you feel like shaped you more?
I think now I definitely still listen to full records, but I listen to them on like commutes, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like on tour, because we were driving for so many hours, I was able to just like listen to full records and not needing to stop. Because sometimes I like to listen to a record in its entirety, especially when it's new. And I think it's hard to get into a full record when it's new. And like, I like to listen to its entirety. So commuting and things like that is where I usually listen. And I think I'm trying to think of what inspired me. When I was in middle school and high school, I'd listen to like lots of hip hop. So I don't think that like, and some people are like No Name, who's a rapper mm-hmm. from Chicago, her like record of like, just like it's rap, but it was so bright and it felt really like sunny and things like that. And the way that the production was like inspired me a lot.
She's amazing.
And also Toby, especially. And then this artist, Tierra Whack, who's a rapper. Her so like good. The minute songs, but also that like series where she made like the music videos to all the songs, especially visually and creatively. I was like, this is crazy. And it's like so smart, but it's like she created like this world, which is amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it's so odd. I love
it. Yeah. And then not necessarily like music, but the artist Yuna, who's a Malaysian artist. She was the first just like Asian artist that I saw live in Singapore. She played a show and I was like already 16 at the time. It was the first time I saw just like a Asian artist and a Malaysian artist play. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy.
Yeah, and the visual is really like foreign, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So like seeing like in the flesh, like someone that's like me at the time, I was like, whoa. And she's been an inspiration ever since as well. So yeah.
Have you ever connected? I feel like
she's like a dream person I'd love to collaborate with.
Yeah.
So yeah, one day, but we haven't connected yet.
It's only a matter of time.
Honored because she's like, she's definitely like Southeast Asia, she's like pioneered like breaking into the Western world and Western music. So I would love to meet her and like ask and like talk to her and ask what she thinks and of the new generation of artists and things like that.
Yeah, she's such an R&B pioneer. Like she's collaborated with Usher. It's pretty amazing to see like how she's broken into the mainstream.
Definitely.
Against all odds.
So your latest track, which came out last month in November of this year, Solo Dates, is such a fun, infectious song. I know we talked about it a little bit already, but I wonder if you could give a little bit of a breakdown of sort of how that song came about and a little bit of, your creation process.
Yeah. So I made this track with two of my friends, Maya, who was playing guitar at the Golden event. And then a friend, Nick, who goes as bench warmer. And we had a session. I was an hour late to the session because I thought the session was an hour later. But I was like, guys, I'm so sorry. I was on the train. Like, just start without me. It's okay. And then I came and then they already made that, like, there's this guitar, like constant guitar melody that's in the song, and they did that, and I was like, I came in, and I was like, whoa, this is sick.
You're like, and then great, I was late, and it got done.
Yeah. I was like, I think it was good that I was late. And then we kept going, and it's fun because, especially, I love writing. Collaborating and writing, and then we were just thinking of themes that we wanted to write about, and then I was like, guys, I love solo. I was just like talking about how I love solo dates, and it being like my personality since high school. And then we thought of this like scenario of someone like seeing a travel voucher online and then being like, I'm just gonna get that $100 off and go on a trip around the world, and then just like enjoying themselves. And then we were talking just about how sometimes it's really fun to be by yourself. And then yeah, that's just kind of how the song kept going. We kept writing.
I open my computer, can't believe what's on the screen. $100 voucher on a ticket just for me.
And then most of the song was, the vibe of it was there. And then we just kept going afterwards, making like really little tweaks and edits, and things like that. And yeah, that's just how it came about. Kind of simple, but happened 'cause I was an hour late.
You were having a morning solo day with yourself.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I lost track of time. I was having so much fun, guys. I'm so sorry.
That's great. So you wrote the lyrics for that sort of in the recording session. You didn't have that prepped before you went in.
No, yeah.
That's awesome. And how long was that, just one day?
We made that, in one day. But then afterwards, we just started tweaking. Like for me, I usually like to make the demo, the day of and during the session. And then I like to make many demos and then listen through all of them and then be like, these are the ones. And I think like after a while of making demos, this one definitely was like a one I was like, I love it. It's very me. And then afterwards we just kept going with it. And then there is the demo. And then I have a very long like vocal process that I do. Mm. And then we just like did instruments and like tweaked the lyrics and things like that. So yeah.
Tell us about the vocal process. I'm curious.
I definitely learned from the Michelle producers and I first like hated it. Like, so they would say, for example, if there was a verse, they would make us sing a phrase like 30 times, 40 times. Wow. I think it's just like, it's like vocal comping and we would sing it 40 times, but then listen through. And then like, even in that one sentence, we would comp through all the 40 takes and like pick out and like choose the best take. And like we can edit and create the best take possible. Wow. And I used to hate it. Cause I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like my voice, I can't sing anymore. but after that, after maybe like the first time working with them, I like hated it. But then I was like, now I only do that. And it really makes a difference. And it takes a long, long time, but it also kind of helps with like learning how to like make really small things in your voice. And it allows you to like try a bunch of things. Cause it's like, if you have 40 takes, you don't do like the same take every time and you can change different inflections or like perform in a different way. And it's fun because when you're working with someone, they can like suggest things. And through that, you can like really just learn about more about your voice as well. So yeah, it's a long process, but
wow,
I learned a lot about my voice and also just like how I like to produce vocals.
Right. Cause you go crazy if you're doing 40 takes the same way. So just like, just in order to like get yourself out of that, you know, to be creative, you're like, well, I guess I'm just going to try something like totally crazy. And maybe that might be the thing that sort of like lights up that line or even that word.
Definitely. Yeah.
And when you comp vocals, do you like to have someone else to tell you what they like, or do you go through it yourself and trust yourself?
We usually do this like me and at least one other person do it together. And then I have a phone and they're going through it and they were like, yeah. And then I write the number down, like number one or yeah, number four.
Yeah,
you're
listening for the reaction.
Yeah. And then afterwards, when we have like out of 40, maybe we had five and then we like keep narrowing down till we find the one number that's like we all like.
Painstaking.
Yeah.
Well, I hear that work ethic for sure in your work. And it's very Beyonce-ish. Like,
yeah,
you know that she does that shit too.
Yeah. It's very fulfilling though.
Billion vocal stacks.
Yeah. I'm grateful also like the people that I work with are down to do that because it takes a long time.
Right.
I mean, if that's your first, if you're working with the Michelle producers and that's kind of like imprinted on you forever now.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. I tried like doing it with another producer and like I felt so bad because they were so like, they're like, oh my, we had to like comp it and they're like, oh, like they were so discouraged and I felt so bad because they're just not used to it. And I was like,
get
I'm
on
so
my level.
Sorry. Yeah, that's I was like, right. I'm so sorry.
No, no, no. This is the standard of quality that you require.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to Singapore really fast because I want to know if it's changed and what your experience has been. Because my experience, I've played one musical show in Singapore that my dad helped me set up.
Aww.
And when I was there, people were going, can you play Don't Know Why by Norah Jones? Can you play this? Can you play that? Singapore loves covers. Like, it seems like I got a lot of, I've had much less supportive family than you have in terms of like, why are you doing music? Why do you want to pursue this? And every time I went to see live music in Singapore, it was like a cover band situation where people were like, it was the only way to make money. Like they'd put out a tip jar and they would just play the hits. So I'm curious when you were starting out, I know you only lived there for 3 years, but were you playing open mics out there? And like, how did you find the indie scene in Singapore? Did you find that there was a like a creative voice in the community? Or did you find that once you got to America, that's when things started to click for you?
Yeah, I think when I was there, I was like 16 at the, like, I think I was only really exposed to music within my high school. Mm-hmm. And I think because there were the programs, but I think going out and like finding music, a lot of it was not local acts, but going to see just cons, like artists that would come to Singapore. And I think because at the time, comparatively, when looking at like ticket prices here, it's like in Singapore, it's like $80, but it's like for people, it's like a big deal. So they spend that money. But, and so I think like, I think there, and I didn't really experience local artists when I was living there at the time. And there were like a couple, like Gentle Bones is like a big one and Charlie Lim. But I recently went back to Singapore. I try to go once a year and I went back in June and I just like wanted to DM a bunch of artists there and meet them. Cause I don't think as an art, like I wasn't an artist when I was in Singapore. So I wanted to, now having like a few years of experience, go back and meet like people, and now having more knowledge, like ask them questions and also just see the scene a little more. And I think the scene there is like definitely growing and definitely better, but I think it's still very hard to establish yourself as an artist in Singapore. Cause I was talking to some like people there who were doing like, who are more on the business side. And it was interesting because they're saying that in Southeast Asia, Singapore is an English speaking country. So artists in Singapore are like versing or like against like people in America and people in other countries. So it's like, but in, if you're in Malaysia or if you're in things like that, they have like, you can be a Bahasa artist and you can sing Bahasa, or so you can have your niche. But in Singapore, it's more difficult because people would rather listen to international artists, which is crazy. But it was cool because also the community there at the same time is so tight knit and so mm-hmm. supportive. But I realized when I was there that it is such a small country that it's hard to expand yourself as an artist and grow as an artist. But it was cool. I feel as though, especially Singapore has like definitely like a genre that they really like. They love like pop music. And it was interesting because I went to this acoustic show and these girls right in front of me, they had pictures. They had, their wallpaper was like, artists like Grant Perez was their wallpaper, and like artists like Hojin was their wallpaper. And it was interesting because Singapore really likes it, like acoustic kind of pop music. But it was crazy because I was like, why are my friends their wallpaper? And it was just really random because cool that like people I'm growing with like are popular here. But I think Singapore still definitely has the same style that they like, which is, yeah, I would say like they like artists like Kesha, Nicki, Bruno Major, kind of that like jazzy, but and like things like that. But I think the scene, the music scene in Singapore is growing, but it's still difficult just because it's so small. But I think definitely it's been it's getting better, and I think it will get better. Mm.
The language thing is so fascinating. I don't think I ever really thought about it in those terms, and how, you know, Singapore is such a diverse sort of plurality of a country that has so many nationalities that have made it home. That, yeah, like English, and I think, you know, Cantonese, I think, is also one of the official languages, but English is probably one of the biggest in terms of a common language, and just how, yeah, that means they're competing on an international level with the biggest American artists and British artists and that kind of thing. Whereas maybe, you know, I'm thinking of course like Korea and Japan, even maybe like Vietnam to a different extent, like, you know, because, you know, they have a common language, you know, the artists that sing in those languages have more of a homegrown fan base because people want to hear music that's sung in their language. Yeah, that's really fascinating. I never really quite sort of like put that together.
Yeah. And I think because Singapore is so small, if you're an artist like trying to play live, you may just start playing the same places over and over again. So people could get like tired, or quote, it's hard to just like grow because it's hard to just leave. It's very hard to just like leave the country and like play many venues. But in the US, it's so big that you could drive to so many places. So it's definitely difficult to be an artist there, but it's cool because people are still going and they're so nice and want to support each other.
Yeah.
So, Faye, you know, as I said, you had a single just come out last month, November. What's on the horizon for Fig? What do you have coming up?
Next year, definitely the first proper album is on the works. So I hope to release that. And also, I've never played a headline show, so I have no idea what my audience looks like. So I'd love, love, love to hopefully do that next year. And I don't know what that experience will be like, but I'm very excited when it comes. Nice. And yeah, I think just also with Cops and continuing to do those events. And I hope to do Cops Dance outside of New York too, and just build community outside of New York as well. And yeah, and I'm just keep exploring and going on solo dates by myself. But yeah, that's currently what's in the works, but hopefully more will come.
That's amazing.
Well, your army of colonels is here and waiting for you. We can't wait to see what you do next. We'll be there front row at your New York headlining gig. Mm-hmm. And we're so grateful that you took the time to talk to us. Thank you so much, Faye. And I'm going to go have a corn on the cob now.
Me too.
Thank you so much again to Fig for joining us on the show today. You can find her on Instagram at figwoop. That's F-I-G-W-O-O-P. And her most recent single, Solo Dates, is out everywhere now. Don't forget to subscribe, follow, and rate the podcast on whatever platform you listen to. Your engagement really, really helps us make the show better. Tell us what you think about the show and who you'd like to hear from in future episodes. Send us a message on Instagram at goldenhourpod or email us at goldenhourwithk@gmail.com. Golden Hour is created by me and produced and edited by Dave Yim. We are proudly part of the Potluck Podcast Collective. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.